Chapter 15. It was getting damn chilly in the cockpit. That was a problem I could do something about. The helmet engaged with the collar of my flight suit. I had only to make a couple adjustments to get it fully sealed. The booties were already sealed to the pants, and after I pulled gloves out of a pocket, put them on, and sealed them at the wrists, I pulled a red cord at the waistband to inflate the flight suit. There was a hissing, and a thin gap of air filled the space between inner and outer layers of the suit. That made me feel warmer almost immediately. The flight suit had a heater powered by a battery in the waistband, but I didn't want to drain power yet. Flight suits were intended to be used only as short-term emergency protection against loss of cabin pressure in the vacuum of space. Heat would leak away from my suit much faster in cold water than in the vacuum of space. I was still shivering, and my fingers and toes were numb. It was a good sign they were tingling as warm blood seeped back in. Now that I wasn't feeling like I would freeze to death quickly, I turned my attention to other matters. What worried me more than my own fate was what the hell had happened. Who had fired a missile at us on a planet that was supposedly uninhabited? Could there still be elders hanging around Gingerbread? Had they or their ancestors overslept and missed transcending their physical form? I'd found that difficult to believe. If there were elders still on Gingerbread, surely they had weapons better than an anti-aircraft missile. That was another puzzle. Only one missile had been fired at us, and even though we had been flying slowly without stealth, the missile had failed to score a direct impact. Its warhead had set off a proximity detonation, and perhaps when it realized it was going to fly too low and miss us. When Reed called out the missile warning, I had accelerated and pulled the nose up. That simple maneuver should not have caused any advanced technology missile to miss its target, yet the missile fired at us had failed to hit a big, fat target. None of it made sense. Beyond what had happened, I worried about the three crew members who had made it out the door. Where were they? Had they been able to swim to shore? They might be injured. Certainly they were in shock, although we all trained to act in high-stress situations. What worried me most was that the beings who fired a missile at our dragon were a danger to crash survivors. Sammy popped to the surface, gasping in air and choking out ice-cold lake water at the same time. That didn't work too well, so she held her breath despite a desperate need for oxygen and concentrated on coughing up the last of the water she had swallowed during her desperate struggle to get out of the sinking dragon's cabin. After three coughs so violent they hurt, she puked up part of her breakfast and took that as a sign that her lungs were now ready to take in air, so she sucked in a giant lungful. It felt like water still was sloshing around the bottom of her lungs. She would deal with that later.
"Colonel Bishop?"
She gasped the question to Captain Zhao, who was treading water and supporting her. Zhao shook his head, and when Sammy waved a hand, released her to swim on her own. "He didn't get out."
"He was right behind me."
Sammy felt a chill of shock from more than the chilly water.
"I shouldn't have left him."
"Lieutenant Reed!"
Zhao grasped her right shoulder and put his face close to hers.
"You did everything you could. Colonel Bishop is capable of taking care of himself. Once we started sinking, your first responsibility was to get yourself out of there. You won't do anyone any good if you're dead. Understood?"
"He could have drowned in there. This is my fault," Sammy said, her voice trailing off in pure misery. "I lost the colonel."
"Reed, listen to me. Are you listening to me?"
Zhao waited until she looked him in the eyes and nodded.
"This is not your fault. Someone just shot us down with a missile. It is their fault. And I like a word with our super smart AI, who assured us this planet was uninhabited."
"Yes, sir."
Sammy's eyes narrowed in recognition that Skippy the Unreliable had indeed informed the merry band of pirates that Gingerbread was totally uninhabited. For a moment, that took her mind away from the horrifying thought of the colonel being trapped and drowning in the sinking dropship.
"He did tell us that."
She felt for her Z-phone, and for a panicked moment could not find it in the right thigh pocket of her flight suit. Then she remembered tucking the Z-phone into her left breast pocket and sealing it there just after the dragon stopped skidding across the water.
"We should call—" "What was that?"
Zhao was interrupted by a splash in the water 20 meters away, toward the western shore.
Air bubble from the ship? Sing speculated.
Zhao feared the splash might have been caused by a predator under the water. They knew almost nothing about the native life of Gingerbread, and what little they knew came from Skippy. That alien AI had proven to be less than accurate on too many occasions, especially recently.
We shall head for shore, Zhao ordered. There's nothing we can do for Colonel Bishop out here. The water is too deep. We barely made it to the surface from where we were, and the dragon must have gone deeper by now. This water is too cold for us to survive long out here. Swim toward.
He jerked and spun around as another splash appeared just to the west of him.
Ah!
He exclaimed, and clutched his right shoulder. Sammy had been looking at the west shore of the lake, seeking the best spot to swim toward, to get out of the water as quickly as possible. The current in the lake was flowing south. That would drag the three humans along, so they needed to plan for drift rather than blindly swimming due west. When she came to the surface, she had been pleasantly surprised to see the lake shore was only a bit more than 100 meters away. The crashing dragon at least had skidded across the water in a helpful direction. Captain Zhao had been right. There was nothing the three of them could do for Bishop, and she was already shivering uncontrollably from being in the frigid water. Because she had been looking away from Zhao, she didn't see him get hit. When she turned, she did see speckles of blood splattered on the right side of his face and a tear in his flight suit between his neck and right shoulder.
Sir, you're hit!
Zhao felt the wound with his left hand as his right arm was stiff and hurt to move. From what his fingers could tell, the bullet, or whatever it was, had only grazed him. The wound was not deep, but it was bleeding freely into the water.
"It's just a scratch. They're shooting at us from the eastern shore," he shouted the obvious, and as he spoke, there was another splash just 3 meters to his right.
This splash was bigger, throwing up a fountain of water and pounding his underwater limbs and torso with a hard shock.
"Explosive rounds! Dive!"
Sammy would never forget that terrifying swim. She wanted nothing more than to float atop the water, exposing as little as possible of her body to the icy water, but to do that meant death. The sniper shot every time a human was on the surface more than a few strokes, so the three popped up only to gulp in air, exhaling while submerged. They couldn't swim in a straight line because that would give the sniper an easy target, so the swim of only 100 meters took more than 15 minutes. After 3 minutes, chilled to the bone and shivering so her arms were clumsy, she remembered the flight suit had internal heaters, and she activated that system. Running only on the battery pack built into the front torso of the suit, the heaters would not last long. Sammy only needed to get ashore where the air temperature was like a warm spring day, so she cranked up the heat and soon felt her arms and legs loosening as they warmed. Underwater navigation was not her best skill, she realized after the fifth time she popped up for air and saw the lake shore had annoyingly shifted position again. She kept drifting to the left as she swam underwater, made more difficult because she could not risk swimming in a straight line. The water was clear enough to see 20 or more meters, but the lake was deep, and there were no underwater markers until she was close enough to shore not to need them. The three humans touched bottom at roughly the same time, and without needing to communicate with each other, they all knew what to do. Remain under the water until they were as close to the lake edge as possible, then get to their feet and dash up the bank quickly to get behind a tree. Getting behind a rock or the cover of a stream bed would be preferable, but the glimpses Sammy had seen told her the western shore near her was a steady slope upward without any cover other than sparse trees dotted here and there. Zhao and Sing touched bottom in an area where the underwater ground was smooth stones that provided good footing, until they reached the line right near shore where wave action kept the exposed rocks wet and therefore covered with slippery algae. Both Zhao and Sing skidded and fell on the algae before choosing survival over dignity and crawling on hands and knees to gain the shore. Sing's life was saved by one fall when she slipped and bashed a knee on a stone. Just after she fell, an incoming round buried itself in the undercut bank at the water's edge, and the explosive tip blew dirt and mud back at her, knocking her to fall on her ass in knee-deep water. She wasted no time in rolling to one side, ignoring the pain signals from her injured knee and scrambling up the muddy lake bank on her belly. By the time she stood to sprint for the cover of a tree, she saw Captain Zhao also stumbling vigorously out of the water just to her north, weaving side to side to throw off the sniper's aim. Sammy was not so comparatively lucky. When she felt her outstretched hands touch bottom in murky water, she touched not stones, but mud and silt. The lake bottom in front of her was a sticky mass that sucked at her boots when she tried to walk in it, and attempting to stand caused her to sink in the muck up to her knees. No way was she going to be able to run quickly enough to avoid providing an easy target for the sniper, she saw instantly. Rather than trying to wade through the stubborn mud, she pulled herself backwards into deeper water and ducked down as a round hit the water where she had been struggling only a moment before. What saved her life was the sniper being distracted by the two humans who had already gained the shore and were temporarily exposed. The enemy's attention was drawn to Sammy only after Zhao and Singh ducked behind the western side of trees and were lost to view. During the brief moment she had her head above water while trying to walk through the muck, Sammy had seen her companions wobbling on the slippery stones along the shore. That, she decided, was not what she was going to do. She could not afford to pick her way carefully over the submerged stones, particularly not as the sniper would now only have her as a target. With the suit heaters fading, but her exertions keeping her warm enough, she swam along the shore until she saw what she wanted. A thin stream, really a creek, flowing down into the lake. Barely any water trickled out of the creek now, and the watercourse cut so shallowly into the land that it was useless as cover. But in the time the creek had been flowing, it had flushed small rocks and grains of sand down into the lake. In the lake below the creek, the bottom was sandy, and, Sammy hoped, firm footing for a quick dash to a tree she was already focused on. If the sniper anticipated her plans, her efforts would be for nothing. So she swam north past the creek and popped up for a deep breath, determined to swim all the way in toward the creek until she could leap to her feet and run. Fortunately, the lake bottom was indeed sandy where the creek cut in, and that sand extended out into the water, so she was able to follow the underwater marker until her hands were clutching sand. Sweet, relatively hard-packed sand. She swam inward, lungs burning, until the water was less than waist-deep, and she feared the sniper could see her body's heat signature in the shallow water. Gathering herself, she exploded out of the water, rising to her feet and already running, weaving side to side intentionally. In five long strides, a foot touched the shore, and she made a beeline for a tree, then dodged to her right at the last second to duck behind a different tree that had been her intention all along. Good idea, she thought, as she flung herself flat on her belly, because the first tree had a chunk knocked out of it by the impact of an explosive round. Bark, splinters, and sawdust were flung in all directions, with the sawdust drifting down to coat her hair.
Are you all right, Reed? Zhao called from her left.
Yes, sir, she replied, not daring to move. That was good thinking, coming up where the bottom is sand.
I saw you slipping on those stones, sir. Figured I couldn't take time to do that. Do we stay here?
The trees up that way from the lake are larger. Give us more cover. I'm afraid the sniper can knock down one of these trees.
He gestured to the tree he was huddled behind.
With a couple rounds.
Sammy raised her head.
We won't make it up to the forest, sir.
The trees grew thickly farther away from the lake, but the slope of the land was steep in that direction, and the denser tree cover had to be half a kilometer away.
No, but we can get to something more stout than these saplings, Zhao stated. Then we can call in and find out what the hell is going on here. We all go together, so find a tree to aim for and tell me when you're ready.
Sammy didn't think she would ever be ready to run while being tracked by an unseen and unknown sniper. She held up her left hand, saw that it was no longer shaking from cold, exertion, and lack of oxygen. The longer they waited, the more time the sniper had to sight in on their positions.
Ready now, sir.
3, 2, 1, go!
In addition to a low-pitched moaning sound I could not find the source of, and the alarming creaking and popping sounds of the dragon's hull flexing,
There was an intermittent sound coming from under the water. It was probably an alarm telling me what I already knew. I was in extreme danger. Whatever it was, no way was I going into that dark, frigid water to identify it. The cockpit was a third full of water, and I had a chilly but somewhat dry perch on a console with my feet resting on a seat. The cold air had me shivering as the cabin air's last vestiges of heat were pulled away by the mass of chilled water outside the hull.
"Oh!"
the underwater alarm said, and I cocked my head.
"Eat!"
it said. Crap, that was no alarm. Tumbling off the console before I lost my nerve, I ducked my head under the water to hear and locate the source of the sound. I felt around until my fingertips detected a vibration and my frozen fingers closed around the familiar shape of a Z-phone. It must have fallen out of my pocket during the scramble to evacuate.
"Joe! Answer me, you idiot!"
Skippy boomed at me, his voice ringing at painful volume around the cockpit. "I'm here, Skippy. Where is here? How the hell should I know?" I stared at the Z-phone. "I'm at the bottom of a lake, or near the bottom."
"What are you doing there?"
His voice was a disbelieving screech.
"You should have gotten out of the dropship after it hit the lake, you dum-dum."
"Gosh, wow, that never occurred to me, Skippy."
"Damn it, you—"
"Oh, haha, sarcasm, I get it.
How did you end up at the bottom of a lake?"
he asked incredulously. "The dragon got hit by a missile, Skippy, in case you have not been keeping up with current events. Joe, was your seat back and tray table in the full upright and locked position before you hit the lake?"
I knew it. This is all your fault."
"My fault? A missile came out of nowhere and—"
"Joe, it's real simple. You were pilot in command when you crashed, correct?"
"Yes," I responded sullenly.
"And now your dragon is at the bottom of a lake. An aircraft is supposed to be in the air, yet now your dragon is underwater. The pilot operating manual for the dragon does not mention a submersible feature, unless I missed something. You were flying an aircraft, and now you are captain of the Titanic. Totally your fault."
"That's kicking a guy when he's already down, Skippy. Sorry, Joe, I'm a little upset."
"I'm a little upset too, Skippy.
Lieutenant Reed and the others, are they safe?"
"Yes, safe enough for now, anyway. They're on the western shore now, taking cover behind trees. Do you know how deep under the water you are?"
"I don't. The instruments are out. You want me to stick my head out the window?"
No.
"All I can tell you is the ship sank a long way, then it rolled deeper after it hit."
Give me a minute. I'm attempting to triangulate your position."
"Screw that for now. What the hell happened? Who hit us? You said this planet was uninhabited."
"Amazing. You are at the bottom of a lake in a crashed dropship, and what you care most about is who shot at you."
"Hell yes! I'm responsible for my people."
"It's not like you can do anything about it right now, Joe."
"That's not the point."
I had trouble speaking as my teeth were chattering from the cold.
"What happened?"
"Well, it appears we have a group of Theranin living here."
"Shit, Theranin. I thought all those little green pinheads were killed by the Guardians."
"That's what I thought also, Joe."
His voice contained an implied duh. "Some of them must have survived and made their way here in dropships or escape pods. I did tell you that once ships have been rendered harmless, the Guardians leave them pretty much alone. One or two dropships landing here might have been permitted by the Guardians as long as those dropships did not take any hostile action."
It is likely any survivors would be trapped here permanently. Any attempt to build a jump drive would attract the wrath of the Guardians."
"When was the last time a Theranin ship tried to jump in here?"
"According to the records I have access to, that would be around 400 years ago."
"Whoa. Damn, maybe that explains why that missile missed us. It was freaking ancient. Unless the Theranin have been able to build new missiles."
"I very much doubt that, Joe. For the moment, this is a guess, but I suspect any beings living here have been forced to exist on a low level of technology to avoid attracting the attention of the Guardians. Flying around in aircraft, using high-tech weapons, and building an industrial infrastructure are all things that the Guardians would, let's say, discourage. That explains why we didn't detect the Theranin until now. They have been laying low."
"Great. Just freaking great.
Hey, wait. You said those green pinheads couldn't use weapons without the Guardians coming down on their heads. Then how the hell did they launch a missile at us?" As you pointed out, Joe, Skippy's voice dripped with sarcasm. I changed the game here when I told the Guardians to stand down. The Theranin must have realized the rules had changed when they saw you flying around without the Guardians knocking you out of the sky. Well, shit, Skippy, that's no good. Now we have an unknown number of Theranin to worry about down here? Possibly more than just Theranin. What? Use your brain, Joe. If a group of Theranin were able to land here and survive, then other species might be on this planet also. The advanced technology of the Rindaloo and Maxolks would have given them a better chance of reaching the surface here after their ships were disabled.
Oh, hell. I felt sick. There could be a bunch of senior species hanging out down here, and you just removed the one thing that keeps them from stomping us like a bug?
Joe, at the time you were very much in favor of me telling the Guardians to stand down, he answered peevishly.
Sorry, you're right. We'll deal with one problem at a time. Connect me with Chang so I...
Lieutenant Colonel Chang is already directing a response. Major Smythe is loading a Spec Ops team into dropships now, and other dropships will be scanning the area around the camp for hostiles. Your team is highly competent. Let them do their jobs, Joe. What we need to worry about is getting you out of there.
Okay. I tried to bite my lip in frustration, but my teeth were chattering so badly from the cold I almost drew blood. Instead of biting a lip, I squeezed my numb hands into fists and released. Squeeze and release, then repeat. That action forced warm blood into my numb fingers. You got any ideas?
I assume you sealed yourself in the cockpit, as Lieutenant Reed told me the main cabin had a bad leak and was filled with water.
Yeah, I'm in the cockpit. I got the door cranked closed and I fixed another small leak. It's about a third full of water in here. And it's cold, Skippy. Really cold.
It can't be super cold, Joe, or the water would freeze, but... Okay, to a hairless monkey, I am sure it is plenty chilly.
You don't have a lot of oxygen left in the cockpit, he declared, as he knew the cramped volume of a Krestang Dragon A dropship's cockpit. Ship oxygen supply is probably out also.
I reached down to the pilot seat and picked up the oxygen mask there, fitting it over my nose and mouth and pulling the lever to activate it.
Nothing, Skippy, it's dead.
Okay, no problem. I thought that would be the case. You do have your emergency O2 bottle, correct?
I patted the small bottle tucked into a pouch in the right thigh of my flight suit. A hose ran up the suit to the collar, and in another pocket was a soft, collapsible mask.
Yes, that only provides 90 minutes of oxygen, Skippy. I'm conserving it for when I really need it.
A Dragon or any other dropship I knew of had 3 oxygen systems. The primary oxygen supply was the cabin air, a mix of oxygen and nitrogen. If that system failed, pilots and crew were to immediately switch to the backup system that fed mostly concentrated oxygen through tubes into masks. The masks were supposed to be used short-term while the cabin oxygen system was fixed, but masks could be used long-term if needed. If the masks also failed, each crew member had an emergency bottle of pure oxygen either in their flight suit or in cabinets scattered around the cabin. If you had to go to the emergency supply, you were supposed to drop everything and fix the primary or secondary system. The 4th-level system was prayer, because after the emergency oxygen bottle ran out, you could kiss your ass goodbye.
When you really need it?
Well, that would be about now, Joe. We need to get you out of there before you become so weak from cold that you are unable to get yourself out.
Is there any chance of rescue?
Not in time for you, Joe. Skippy was morose. Lieutenant Colonel Chang will not allow dropships to overfly the lake until the Theranin on shore have been neutralized with a ground assault by Major Smythe's team. Captain Zhao and Lieutenants Singh and Reed on the west shore are taking intermittent rifle fire from the east shore, and they report movement on the hills above them to the west.
Crap. Chang is right. Do not risk another dropship to rescue me.
Any idea how many Theranin are out there, or what weapons?
Joe, your team has this, Skippy admonished.
Worry about yourself, because no one else can help you right now.
Okay. Okay, what do I do?
First, get your emergency oxygen mask ready, but don't turn it on yet. You will need that oxygen to swim through the cabin and up to the surface. Now, since you have no training in procedures from escaping from a submarine, which is basically what your Dragon is now, I will break it down Barney style for you. It is good that you were able to get the cabin door closed, because if the water had flooded in, the remaining air would have become pressurized to the same as the surrounding water,
and you would have quickly suffered nitrogen narcosis. Unfortunately, you now need to get that door open wide enough to fit through. I calculate you are about 130 meters below the surface, Joe.
Whoa, I said slowly. That was almost 400 feet. There was a whole lot of heavy, cold, dark water looming over my head.
Skippy continued explaining the escape procedure to me. It was risky. I had to go on emergency oxygen, then partly go under the water in the cabin to manually crank the door open. That would allow water to rush in, and I needed my flight suit to protect me from the pressure of the water. The pure oxygen of my emergency bottle would help reduce nitrogen sickness when I reached the surface.
Skippy, should I stay here and pre-breathe on pure oxygen for a while to get the nitrogen out of my blood?
That would be a good idea, but you don't have time, Joe. To get all the nitrogen out of your system would take about 2 hours.
Oh, indeed. When you are ready, turn on your emergency oxygen supply, then seal your flight suit.
Ready now. The first thing I did was tuck the thin Z-phone away in a slot inside the helmet so I could continue talking with Skippy. Next, the emergency mask went over my nose and mouth, secured with a strap inside the helmet. An inhale fitted it to my face, and I turned a knob to start the oxygen flowing. With the helmet faceplate closed and latched, I was on internal oxygen. Should I turn on the suit heater?
If you feel you need to. Flight suits are designed to be used in air or vacuum rather than water. The thermal density of water will rapidly pull heat away from your body, so the suit heaters will not be able to keep up. It would be best if you can ration the heater power until you really need additional heat to prevent you from becoming unconscious. However, you must also keep your muscles in usable condition until you are ascending.
Balance use of heat, got it, I replied.
Now I crank the door open?
Yes, do it slowly, in a controlled manner.
Oh,
what?
I'm kneeling in the water and you're right, it is damn cold.
Turn on the suit heater if you need to, Joe.
No, I'm good. I need my arms more than legs to get the door open and swim through the main cabin. I'll activate the heater when I need to.
My expectation was I would need artificial heat once the cockpit filled with water high enough to surround my torso, sucking body heat away from my core.
I have the crank extended.
What is it? Skippy asked anxiously.
It's not moving.
The door?
No, Skippy, I meant the line at the Taco Bell drive-thru down here.
Of course I meant the freaking door!
You don't have to be nasty about it.
Sorry, I apologized to the alien AI who was safely on shore while I was trapped 400 feet down in an icy lake.
Trying it again, I grunted.
Damn it! The crank on this thing won't turn at all.
Did you try turning it the other way? Skippy suggested helpfully.
I didn't feel like arguing with him, so I tried that. The end of the crank moved one notch, maybe a quarter inch, then froze.
It was super hard getting the door closed the last bit. I think the crash warped the frame.
Ah, damn it! I shouted in frustration. That handle might as well have been welded in place. It was not moving.
No good, Skippy. It won't move.
Uh-oh, Joe. I think I know the problem. The water pressure outside is pushing in the door, bending it inward. If the frame was already warped, then the door will not move until the pressure is relieved.
I need to equalize pressure on both sides of the door, I guessed.
Let the water in?
That may resolve the problem, Joe, but if you let the water in and the door still won't open, you will be in very great danger.
I'm not in very great danger now?
Good point. Let me think a minute. There may be other options.
This thing has only one door, Skippy. The ejection seats won't work underwater?
No, they will not.
His voice was glum.
Well, damn it.
My thoughts exactly, Joe. While we have been talking, I have been running simulations on the effect of water pressure on the cockpit door of a Dragon dropship. You have very bad luck today, Joe. If you were only 100 meters deep, the water pressure would be low enough that the door could likely be cranked open. It would be stiff and difficult, but there is a 90% chance the door could open wide enough for you to escape.
That is fascinating trivia, Skippy, but I'm more than 100 meters deep.
Hence why I said you have very bad luck today.
I am willing to try equalizing the pressure.
Using the lights of my helmet, I looked around the cockpit trying to think of something that could cut or burn a hole in the door.
You know the standard equipment we carry aboard one of these things, Skippy. Is there a drill or laser or something I can use to make a hole in the door?
Searching? No, unless you brought something like that with you.
I did not. I flew thousands of light-years from Earth. Now I'm in a dropship that contains technology aircraft designers back home can only dream about, yet I can't get a freaking door open? This is crazy.
I got to my feet, crawled up on the console so I was out of the water, opened my helmet faceplate, and turned off the emergency oxygen. As long as there was breathable air in the cockpit, I wanted to conserve my emergency oxygen supply.
It is indeed unfortunate, Joe.